On this episode, I talked to Rob from Burbank Sports Cards, one of the biggest eBay sellers in the world. This is Dave, and welcome to the SVA Card Collectors Podcast. What is up? What is going on, everyone? Dave at SVA Card Collectors. Have a great, great show for you guys today. But just before we get started with the interview, I wanted to just dive into what was being released today. This week, not that much stuff. We have, actually tomorrow, we have first off the line Panini Obsidian, which is $1,250. Wah-wah-wee-wah. That is going to be a Dutch oven auction where it'll start from $1,250 and the price will drop after every 5 minutes. You'll find two autographs and two inserts, and will you get that reach around? I do not know. But I know you will be grabbing your ankles if you pay $12.50 for this product, but for this product, but whatever. So, also, was dropping on the 8th right now, things can change, 2020 Panini Absolute Baseball. We also have 2020 Topps, I have to say 2020, like you don't know what year it is. Topps Archive Signature Series Retired Player Edition. I have a love-hate relationship with these cards. It really is just a roll of the dice. $65 per box, and I believe you just get one encased autograph. And if you are doing a case break, it is 20 boxes per case. Absolute Baseball, you're going to be paying around $200, which I think is an exorbitant amount of money for a non-logo. But you do get 4 autos, 2 relics, 4 inserts, and 2 numbered parallels, 10 cards per pack, 2 packs per box, 10 boxes per case. So if you do like hits, this may be the box for you. I like Prism. I like Select way better just looking at them than Absolute. Some people might not agree, and that's okay, because I'm smart enough, I'm proud enough, and doggone it, people like me. If you watch old Saturday Night Live, you'll know what that is. Most people who listen to this do not know any of my references, so I will shut up. Panini Chronicles Soccer, it's dropping on the 8th, but I'll tell you, because people like soccer. I don't know why. I just don't know why. Hate the sport, but it is what it is. People do love it, and it's being collected more and more. I did see Gary V talk about wrestling cards. He was looking for those and older vintage basketball cards. And there was something else, but I'm sure he'll start spewing it and people will start buying it left and right. But right now, we are going to be doing the interview. I hope you guys get a lot of info. Enjoy. How is everyone doing today? I am with Rob from Burbank Sports Cards. Thank you, Rob, for doing this interview.
Hey, happy to do it, man. Nothing beats talking about sports cards first thing in the morning, so happy to be here.
Damn right, as long as it's not my wife. Everyone else would agree. All right, so I think most people know who you are, but I have no idea how you got started.
Okay, well, let's go over that. I got a long history in the business. Let me see something here. It all started in 1979. I was 12 years old, and there was a coin and stamp shop about a mile away from me that I used to haunt because I was a coin and stamp collector first and foremost, but I collected sports cards, you know, mainly, you know, in the summertime like I had since I was 6-7 years old. And at some point, I realized that there were price guides for sports cards, much like there are for coins and stamps. And I was fascinated by it. And within a year or two, the owner let me put a sports card section into his coin and stamp shop. And they would sell the cards during the week. And then I'd come in on Saturdays and work. And then as I got older, I'd come in after school every day. And it just progressed. It was called Rob's Cards and Collectibles. And by the age of 22, my father and I ended up buying the business and have scaled it ever since. We got rid of the coins and stamps and everything that he did and strictly went with cards, which is where my passion was.
That's like a kid's dream. When I was a kid, I was like, well, I'm gonna go in the shows, I'm gonna have my own booth, and then I never, you know, you never really follow through. It's just like dreams in your head. But to actually go, you know what, let's do it, and you just got it done, and that's awesome. Now, who was your team? What's your teams? Who do you like?
Let's see here. You can tell me. I'm from New England originally. I'm, you know, from Brockton, Massachusetts. I moved out to LA when I was 10, but you really never lose those affiliations. So it's obviously, you know, Red Sox, Patriots, etc., with an emphasis on the Red Sox. Big baseball fan.
We got problems. my phone's got to be ringing while I'm doing this. That's great. I am a diehard Yankee fan. and a diehard Jet fan. So I have the best and the worst of everything. So yeah, you're sitting pretty for the past couple of years. You should be pretty happy. Now, are you big into collecting? Do you collect cards? Or are you just in the mindset of always just buying and selling and flipping these cards?
Well, it's kind of funny. People would kind of think this was crazy, but I have no cards at home. None. And people go, well, you're not a collector. I'm like, I'm the most passionate card dork you're ever going to meet. But my inventory is my collection. I see cards 11 hours a day. And my collection is always changing, you know. We got 43 million cards in the building, and I'm not totally attached to any of them. It's collecting, but it's just a different kind of collecting. I probably look at more cards than anybody in the business, so I get my fill. When I go home, I just want to do different things than look at cards.
I would totally agree with you at that scale. Coming back, the first, you know, you don't want to go through and be like, all right, well, now let's look at my cards that I have in my house. Nah, no way. I get exactly where you're coming from. When did you start on eBay? Were you there from the beginning? Were you like one of the first where people had to do money orders and then you would have to wait for it to clear and then you would ship it? Like how? You know,
well, no, I was not one of the first on eBay, but we were one of the first selling cards through mail order. You know, back in the day, it was phone calls, it was letters, it was faxes, and it was a pain in the neck. I mean, literally somebody sent you a list, and you'd search out the cards, give them a price, never hear from them again. It was very wonky, and I got a phone call from Mark Harwell. At the time, he was the VP at Beckett. He had an idea about setting up a marketplace on Beckett.com where I would have access to Beckett's database and be able to use their database to power cards online. And he said, I'm going to pitch this to Jim, but I just want to make sure that you're on board first. Otherwise, it's not going to take off. And that was in 99, about a year after, I believe, eBay started. And at the time, I couldn't do both at the same time. It was either eBay or Beckett. Mm-hmm. eBay was a lot of work. eBay, you had to create all these titles, figure out all this pricing, and it was new. Beckett.com had a lot of traffic. I had a database that I could use. All the nomenclature and pricing was already there. And we chose Beckett. And the cool thing with us is we were so organized going all the way back that marrying our inventory to a database was quite simple. Whereas most of our competition had 5,000 count boxes that were disorganized on top of each other, we were able to scale online quickly. Now, as far as eBay goes, it really wasn't until 2007, 2008, we started dabbling with it because Beckett created a relationship where we could increment and decrement. Mm-hmm. But the real change was in 2013, eBay visited my store. Which was a glorious moment for me. They looked at my store and basically called it an Amazon fulfillment center, which I found kind of funny at the time. Yeah. And I've been chasing eBay for years because insertion fees were our big issues. Yep. 3 cents or 5 cents a listing, multiply that times a million cards, and you're talking $30,000 to $50,000 a month before final value fees. And
so you're not guaranteeing that you're selling the card, so you might have to relist. Oh, I don't think you pay reinsertion fees when you relist, but yeah.
Well, but then what happened was, so I chased them down and finally got them to come down and visit me, and they were impressed. And I'd said, I'd like to put this building onto your platform. And they're like, okay, how do we do that? I'm like, it's simple. You don't charge me insertion fees. We'll put the building on your platform. And the big hang up at the time was images, because they just started making images mandatory. And well, we didn't have images for most of the stuff. And so I hired 8 kids. I bought 8 high-speed scanners. And we started at point A, and a year and a half later, we had the inventory scanned. And now it's just been basically maintenance ever since with the new stuff that comes through, you know, getting the scans done. But since 2013, 2014 to now, we've become the 11th largest volume seller on the platform in any category in the United States. So we have a tremendous relationship with eBay. It powers our business. Beckett Marketplace, that we have the same inventory there. So they increment and decrement across when it sells on either platform. And we sell about 5,000 cards a day on average between the two sites.
That is an insane, I can't even wrap my head around that. Just the inventory aspect of trying to find the cards, especially in the warehouse that you guys have. Now, you're talking about those high-speed scanners. You guys obviously still use them today. How do you, for example, like you have a graded card. Do you just take a picture of that or do you place it on a scanner? Do you, like the raw cards, or do they just, you shift them, you know, you put them in and they just start spitting them out?
As far as images go, we use the flatbeds for the graded cards, but you know, 99.96% of our cards are raw. And we've always had people here that were very good at scanning at high speeds. We have scanners that can scan 40 cards a minute, front, back, auto crop. And it's the only way we could image our inventory. Because if it was the old style of, you know, front, 10 seconds back, 10 seconds crop, it never would have been possible.
That's why I've heard a lot of people talk about scanning. They always go, oh, you're going to scratch the card. You're going to dent the card. You're going to do this, do that. And if someone as big as you is doing it, I can see that really they don't mess up the cards, because you'd be inundated with negative feedback and people returning cards with all these scratches from this high speed
right.
Scanners.
I was for a while I was a VP at Beckett. It was I created Beckett Business Solutions, and it was basically a way to get cards to eBay at scale. And the funny thing was at the big Beckett conference, I did a presentation there, and I brought the scanner with me. And it was like alien technology at the time. People didn't know that tech existed. And so everyone was concerned, what does it do to the card? And I had one guy from some random online blog thing, I don't know who the heck, Cardboard Connection or something at the time. Mm-hmm. He's like scanning the card through over and over and over again. And he's like, this is crazy. There's no damage. He did it like 50 times just to prove mm-hmm. a point to me that it didn't work. And I'm like, you know, you don't understand. It does work. It's almost like it's air. It's almost like it's floating through air through there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the biggest seller in the world is using it. I think that's good enough for me.
Right.
I don't know why you try to prove otherwise. I guess that's real sometimes. Yeah. What, if you don't mind, I don't even know if you even know what program do you use to scan it and for it to autocrop? Because I know a lot of people ask me these questions. That's why I'm asking. If you know,
the scanner is basically a Fujitsu 6130Z. It's off the shelf technology. It's been around for 5-6 years. I discovered it just watching an infomercial basically on television, and they were putting business cards through there, you know, full page documents. And I'm like, why can't that do baseball cards? And so I did some research and picked up one of the machines. They're $1,000. They're not cheap. So mm-hmm. I got one and I realized right away that this was a game changer. And at the time, my son was 16, 17 years old. And I knew all of his friends from me coaching baseball. And I'm like, I hired a small army. And basically, they were all full-time just scanning cards. And, yeah, so, I mean, literally, a card is worthless unless it has a picture. So we needed to get that done. We got it done.
Awesome. How, now, the, how do you get this massive inventory of cards? Like, how did that – was it just relationship building, just starting from the ground up and just knowing people? Or are just are you just getting inundated with people coming in just trying to sell you cards?
I've been buying cards pretty much all my life. That's just what I do. We've bought tens of millions of cards over the years. It's all different forms. It's, you know, people pulling up with a Suburban. I bought the Hawaii deal back in 2008. It literally took three 40-foot storage containers to get back. Dropped 30 grand just on getting it back. If you can imagine how crazy that was. Every day people bring me stuff. I go to the National and literally buy pallets of premium cards, buyout booths, things of that nature. Everyone knows I'm a buyer, and it really doesn't seem to matter what they have. We can generally put a number on it. And, you know, very aggressive buyer, on the high end stuff, on the low end, we make an offer. The worst offer a dealer can make is not making any offer at all, has always been my opinion. And whether it's bulk 80s, commons, or whatever, we can generally put a number to it.
That's pretty cool. Now, what do you, if my podcast is sort of geared towards people mid to late 30s who are just getting back into sports cards. What tips or something when they're getting back into it, if people want to start getting into it, they have some money now and they want to start buying bulk and things like that. What are some things that you would suggest to start doing?
First and foremost, I'd say to be focused. A lot of people just go willy-nilly into all kinds of different things, and it's hard to enjoy the hobby that way. Our store traffic is just tremendous. We've rebuilt our showroom. It's fathers and sons. It's, you know, lapsed collectors that, you know, 91, 90 was like their glory years for collecting. And again, now they have kids, they have some money. It just really depends. We have a great inventory for PC. Nobody can, you know, sell you Craig Biggio's quite like we can. And so we have those type of collectors. Of course, we have the guys that want to come in and rip Prism and grade and do all those kinds of different things. But I think focus is probably your best bet. It's such a rabbit hole, this industry. You could go down so many different rabbit holes. You know, just being educated, you know, watching the online breaks, reading the online columns, you know, talking to your local, you know, card shop owner. Generally, we're all willing to talk to you. And just, it's a passion. It's a hobby. It's an escape. It can also be a lot of money if you're not careful. So I think focus would be my biggest thing. There's so many endless ways to collect, whether it's, you know, vintage set collecting, you know, having a PC, speculating, you know, making it, you know, part of your investment portfolio, or just buying 50-cent packs and just wanting to relive being 14 years old. And, you know, to me, enjoy it. Enjoy it. It's a wonderful, wonderful hobby. I believe it's, you know, the greatest hobby on earth. I'm a little biased, but I can't think of another one that melds sports and money and family together. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, exactly what I did when I first came in was I was all over the place. I went from vintage to modern. I opened up boxes and then just went with graded cards. And, you know, you're just trying to figure out what you really want to collect, and becomes expensive and sometimes frustrating, you know, especially if you're trying to look for good deals, and especially if you're trying to sell some of your cards to, you know, invest back into your PC. So, all right, focus. I would 100% agree with that as well. Now, where do you see the future of sports cards going right now? I know with the pandemic we were talking before, me and you both thought this is the end of times, and the exact opposite happened. So I don't know if you want to be like Kreskin, but where do you see the, you know, sports cards in the next, you know, year or two?
Here's my thought process. 5-10 years ago, it was a whole different landscape. the key to any business, hobby, whatever it is bringing in the young folks, bringing in the next generation. And to be honest, we were losing, you know, to video games, to online games. It just wasn't exciting to the young kids. Everything's changed the last 3-4 years. And I chalk it up to transparency. I think people can know what's happening in the market right now at any given time. Social media, online breaks, there's so much entertainment. You don't need to spend money to be entertained within the industry anymore. The sheer amount of new traffic, new customers and traffic that I'm seeing is exciting because they do collect all kinds of different ways. I don't see a slowdown. I see an escalation, actually. New people are coming in, fathers and sons, young kids coming in that know the business better than most adults. It's an investment vehicle like we've never seen before. Card quality is absolutely amazing. The amount of money that goes back and forth in my shop over the course of a day is staggering. I don't see it slowing down. I see a great future. My son, Ryan, is 25. He basically runs my business. The big fear 5, 10 years ago and 20 years ago when I used to do seminars was there wasn't a generation behind me that had an interest in opening stores, that had an interest in jumping into this business with both feet and making it their livelihood. Yeah, there was people that was a gig economy. Yeah, there was people that did things on the side, but they weren't willing to make the leap. Today, there's a number of people looking to make the leap. There's more storefronts. There's more online options. There's a lot more money. The capital that is in this industry right now is staggering. We've never seen anything like it before, and I don't see it going away. I'm excited about it. I'm excited for my son, who really knows the industry cold. And I'm excited for everybody that's getting in and experiencing just how amazing this hobby is. Not just the next couple of years. I see this for the next 10 years at minimum. I'm excited. I'm excited for the future.
It's good to hear because I'm getting the opposite feeling with regards to short term. Like I think in September, October, November, I think things are going to get a little bit worse. So I've been saying, hey, I think we should sell and hoard your money to buy the good deals then. But it's good to hear someone who's massively into the hobby, who's, you know, selling as many cards as you are and saying, I don't think that's the case. I think it's going to be, you know, huge. Because I actually like to hear that. I don't want to be right at all. I want to be wrong. So I'm glad to hear that. Now, I'm going to go back just one thing because I see these big dealers and, you know, they buy, this is a little bit against the flow of what we've been talking about, but how do you make a decision with regards to what to buy, what to hold and what to sell? You know, you may buy a collection and I don't know, are you just flipping it right away because you bought it at a great price? Or is there any time where you're holding it because you think, man, I really think this guy is going to do real well in the future and I want to get, you know, that more money?
And that's a great question. To be honest, we don't hold anything. We buy it at market. We sell it at market. We rebuy. My opinion is, if we can turn that same card 3 or 4 times, there's more money in it than holding it. You know, capital is always limited. Ryan bought some crazy PSA 10 LeBron yesterday. Should he hold it? Maybe he should. But will he want to sell it today? Yes, he will. And he'll want to put that back into a wax deal that walks in over the counter. And that goes back into a PSA 10 card. And there's this, you know, ladder of profit where we're not in the business of holding cards. I mean, a lot of the guys that do this as a gig and, you know, it's different for them. As a retailer, you need fresh inventory on your site daily, some really engaging inventory on your Instagram daily. You know, these types of cards drive a tremendous amount of traffic to our eBay store when we post, you know, some crazy LeBron refractor, you know, PSA 9 rookie. You know, should you hold it? Yeah, maybe you should. But is it worth, you know, we're going to make what we want to make on it. We sold it in a day. but it drove traffic. It drove Instagram traffic. I'm not in the business of holding anything. I'm a retailer, not a speculator, not a collector. So I think it's a little different on this end.
No, I totally understand. And that's sort of why I asked the question, because I sort of knew the answer. But some people may think, oh, these guys, they buy so many cars and they hold them back and they wait for the right moment. And that's not the case. You can probably flip it 3, 4, 5 times before it actually reaches, you know, the apex of that price of that car. So that's I'd like to clear that up for some people. Now, I don't want to be negative, but what is stuff in the sports car world that you just don't like, that you wish that would change, that you see issues coming up?
There's all, like, I'm a purist, as you probably, you know, taken away from this. I've done this as my livelihood, you know, my whole adult life. Anyways, there's a lot of quick buck artists. I'm not always crazy about the grading companies and how you can submit things 3 times and get 3 different grades. I wish there was I wish that was more computerized, to be honest with you, just like other industries. Mm-hmm. It just opens itself up to fraud. It opens itself up to just people looking at things differently from day to day, and the amounts of dollars that are at stake are just staggering. If the card's a 9, the card's a 9. It shouldn't be able to come back and be a 10. There's a reason it's a 9. That kind of makes me a little crazy. But I try to be a positive person. I think that that's important. I don't always agree with things, but I'm not going to go out on a ledge, you know, screaming about them. You know, it doesn't do me any good as someone that makes their living doing it. And that's basically the answer.
I don't think there's anything, you know, they had the car trimming scandals and things like that, and they've been talked, you know, God knows how long they've been talked about. And it's like, all right, we know there's issues there. Let's just move on from it. So I know, like, eBay is now going to be switching over to manage payments. You may have already been switched over, because I know some of the bigger sellers.
We were switched over 18 months ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, our relationship with eBay is very tight. And I actually spoke at the eBay conference last year representing sports collectibles. And with that kind of relationship, they wanted us to do it. We weren't crazy at first, because the math didn't seem like it was in our favor, at least in the short term. Mm-hmm. In the long term, I think it's helped us. And, you know, I just want everybody on the same playing field now. It just seemed like we were on a different playing field, and it didn't seem right at first. And the sales did dip for about 30 to 45 days, but then they came back to normal. And I'd just like to see everybody on that same playing field now.
Yeah, I think it will be better as a seller on eBay. I don't know about the buying aspect, just because a lot of people use that PayPal as like the kitty fund. And so they're not going to be able to do that anymore. They actually have to link a bank account. I actually just did a podcast released today that I think PayPal is now basically going to buyers and sellers outside of, you know, like eBay, you know, major, you know, companies. If you do a transaction, we're not going to cover you. You know, if they don't send you the card, it's just too bad. So that makes eBay even that more attractive, because you do have that, you know, guarantee that, hey, they're going to look into it. Someone's going to look into it, you know, to save you. But, and so I'm a big fan of eBay. And a lot of people, they complain about it, but it's the biggest company in the world. They drive so much traffic. To try to even say that they're, you know, taking advantage or whatever, I don't know. I think it's just silly.
I think that whole thing's ridiculous. When I speak on their behalf, it's the only platform for sports cards, really. When I spoke, they put up a graphic that sports cards is by far their highest velocity seller on the site, with a card being sold every 7 seconds, which dwarfs anything else that they do on there. You know, and Amazon's obviously the big fish in the e-commerce pond, but they're really actually a small player in our category. And when I speak, I also say that Amazon, unlike eBay, will try to copy someone's model that's successful on their site. So basically, if someone finds something that works on Amazon, you know, Amazon's going to investigate that and see if they can crush that and make it an Amazon brand and put it at the top of search. and put them out of business, whereas eBay doesn't do that. I find eBay to be, you know, very accommodating. They've gotten a lot better over the years, and they are customer-centric when it comes to any disputes, but they should be. To be honest with you, as a consumer on a site buying anything, you want that company to be really, you know, looking out for you. You know, as a seller, it can suck sometimes, but, you know, if you're wrong, you're wrong. And, you know, just got to take responsibility. We offer 60-day returns, which people look at me like I have three heads, and it really hasn't impacted us at all. And it's actually made us a safer place to buy on the site if there is a problem. So we're very customer-centric, just like eBay.
Yeah, it's I see this a lot in Facebook groups. And I think that's where you're going to see Facebook is going to start playing a bigger role, I think, in sports cards. Because if you use their platform, they will protect you. And that's what I saw where other places like Venmo, Zelle, and now PayPal, they ain't protecting you for nothing. So they're going to force you into using Facebook Marketplace. Do I think it's going to be as big as eBay? Not even close. I just think that's something that people are going to start using. With regards to the eBay and the returns, everyone was trying to do the pre-sale for Topps Project 2020. And I think the biggest thing, and what I try to tell people is, if you don't deal, if you're not acting as a business, then these returns are going to be a big pain in the butt. But if you, you know, treat this as a business, returns are just part of the game. And if the price changed dramatically and you have 30-day returns, you know, it's the same thing as if you go to Walmart and you change your mind 20 days from now and you don't want the TV anymore and you return it back to Walmart. They're still going to accept it. You know, they're not going to say no. And so it's about the customer. So of course eBay is going to do that. I agree with your sentiment. And I've been getting a little flack from it. So, but whatever. I just love it. Love eBay. All right. What would you like to promote today? I know you have a bunch of different places that people can buy your cards.
First and foremost, I'd like to promote my website, which is burbanksportscards.com. We've had it for 22 years now. It's powered by Beckett. Tremendous selection. When you run a search, unlike eBay, everything comes up alphanumeric. So if you're looking for, oh, let's just humor you with the Yankees and just say you're looking for Paul O'Neill cards, it's all going to come up from 1986 to present. And it's going to have images. Cards will start at 50 cents. Very easy to put them in a shopping cart. We have free shipping at $50. So literally you could buy 80 different, you know, Paul O'Neill cards for your PC. And it's, you know, comes to $62. It's not like other sites that charge you a lot of money for shipping and takes forever to ship. We get stuff out the door fairly quickly and we cover the shipping. So I think that it's a really good mousetrap for the collector. For the local people, they can actually place an order on our site and choose in-store pickup as your shipping option. So it's free shipping at any price point, and it gives people an opportunity at 2 a.m. to do their shopping and then be able to come into the store and do some browsing. So it's a win-win. Our eBay store, it's got 2.6 million different items on it. The selection's ridiculous. We get stuff out quickly. Our feedback can be as high as 30,000 a month. It's a safe haven for people. And we sell a tremendous amount of stuff on there. And our Instagram, I've kind of taken that over and made it a lot of fun. We're posting at least once or twice a day. I'm starting to run video, kind of educational, showing people how our store works. Our first video was a tour of our warehouse. I don't want to toot my own horn, but my warehouse is fairly amazing. We're happy to show people. Pre-pandemic, we'd take people on the nickel tour when they came in if they wanted to see it. With the pandemic, we're not able to do that, so we'll be giving some deeper dives into that through video on our Instagram feed, which is just Burbank Cards. You know, key things that come in, but we try to have a human element on there. Everybody posts, you know, these big ticket cards. That gets boring to me. We try to do things that are more related to collecting, the human, you know, element of collecting. I got a lot of ideas for that. And our showroom. People walk in our showroom and say it's the best looking store they've ever seen. That means a lot to me. It's very clean. It's very organized. I believe our service is pretty amazing. And, you know, our ability to buy cards. Most times you walk into a card shop, they're not interested. We're interested. We pay cash. We give store credit. We try to cover every element, whether you want a $6,000 card or a 50-cent card. It doesn't matter to us. We're just built for every single type. And I appreciate the plug. Thank you.
No problem. Again, thank you very much for doing this interview. I think people gained some good knowledge, and I think definitely your Instagram is going to be something that I'm going to be watching, because I want to know how the hell you do that inventory in that warehouse. And I saw a little bit of it, and I just, if you looked at I have one green room where I look like a hoarder, where I just have everything piled up. So I want to mimic what you got. So again, thank you very much for doing the interview.
You're very welcome. Have a great day.
Hope you guys enjoyed that interview. I had a lot of fun interviewing Rob. I learned a lot of stuff, and I'm sure you guys did too. Guys, don't forget, I have my SVA writer submission program contest. Each month I'll be giving away $50. Second place will get a crappy Topps Project 2020. Just head over, go to the description. You can go to my Twitter, it's pinned there. Go to Instagram. Go to Flick Chat, anywhere, and you can find this out. You just send me an email with your article. If it's decent, I'm going to post it. And if you get the most views, comments, likes, etc., you guys have a chance of winning $50. So, doesn't hurt. So, there we go. Head over to svacardcollectors.com, download the Flick Chat app, and you guys know what to do. Buy some cards and go broke. Later. You've heard me talk about Star Stock. They've been a sponsor of the show for a couple of months now. Well, now you can deposit, purchase cards, view in your collection, and flip those cards back on the marketplace with so much more to be built. Star Stock is building a sports card marketplace aimed to be faster, cheaper for flipping sports cards than any other platform. They're currently looking for people who want to submit their cards to sell on this new platform. Here's what Star Stock is offering. 5% commission, no ingestion fees. You send in the cards, they do all the work. Cards are guaranteed and secured in the vault. I've seen the little guy, his name is Pepe. He doesn't let anybody in or out. You can choose cards to ship back to you at any time. You can buy, flip, store, or ship cards with a click of a button. If you're interested in getting involved and sending those cards, contact Mike at mike@starstock.com. Again, Star Stock is only looking for rookie cards and are prospects of current players. Head over to starstock.com.